Shane Hegarty joins us in studio. How are you doing, Shane?
I'm good, Ray. It's a lovely day. I left the house without a jacket. It's that time of year. The momentous day of the year. And there's people in T-shirts out there. It's beautiful.
And I wore shorts for the first time today when I wasn't running. So that's it's now till October.
Unbroken.
Unbroken. The one and only you,
yes,
Shane, is your new children's book. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book. And the message is even more beautiful.
Yeah, I'm really, I have to say, so this is a picture book with brilliant illustrations by Ben Mantle. And what happens when I get kids ask, what's your favourite book that you've written? And this is number 12. And you usually have an answer that sort of is, well, I love them all, which I do. You know, I don't really have a favourite. They're all different. But I have to say, I have a bit of a soft spot for this one. I think it just
your
illustrations are amazing. And it's quite a simple thing. I wanted to write a fact book, but I kind of thought of one fact and just stuck at that. So I didn't kind of combination of being lazy, but also it was a really good fact, which is that in the entire history of the universe, from beginning to end, everything that will ever be in it, anywhere in the entire universe, there'll only ever be one of you.
Oh, thanks, Shane.
And I just thought, yeah, exactly, yeah. It's one of those facts that is both completely universal and yet unique to every individual. And so once I came up with it, I loved it and I loved the idea of it. And then Ben has these extraordinary images that go all the way through it. So, yeah, it's been great and it's out since last week, but I've already been reading it to
But it
kids.
Is a very important message, isn't it, for children?
It is. And like I see... one of the great things about my job is I get to go into schools, libraries, I go to festivals, and I'm in, you know, I meet thousands of kids all the time. And I've never met two that are the same. Even the identical twins are different. And as a father of twins, I know how different they can be. And you never know what you're walking into in a classroom, and you never know what challenges they have. And sometimes you get a sense of it from the teachers of how difficult life is for some of them and the amazing work the teachers are doing. But you know, and sometimes they don't realise that amid all of this thing, you know, this kind of the challenges of life, that they are, I know it sounds a bit corny and but they are unique.
Yeah.
And they all have this special thing about them that you kind of hope will carry them through life and whatever challenges.
But it's a hugely important message where we hear this phrase constantly, compare and despair, you know, this when people are comparing themselves on social media. But if you truly believe that you are unique, then comparison is useless. It doesn't mean anything.
And that's the thing. I think when they're younger, you hope that you can get that message is possibly a little easier to get to them. Because once they get the phone, it's a whole other world, isn't it?
What are the rules in your house, or do you want to discuss them?
No, we have the 12-year-olds, the twins haven't got a phone yet.
Are they in sixth class or first year?
They're in sixth class.
Right.
So it's really been going into secondary has been the thing. But
they will get one, will they?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. We haven't had the full discussion about it. But it's a tough one, and I know everybody struggles with it, and you try and do the right things, and I've heard all sorts of, you know, people who don't let it into the bedrooms, which is a good one, or you have the timers on them and you have all of that. But there's definitely a sense that once you hand over the device to the kid, you're handing over an entire world to them that you've.
It changes everything.
It changes everything.
And that's not overstating it. It does change everything.
Yeah. And now at the same time, it's been really good to see that, you know, the our children who do have and have had phones have kind of grown up really well and have had that individualism about them and have. You know, especially our older son, I think he's got a sense of sort of what age
is
wrong.
He?
He's nearly 20.
Right, okay.
And what
age did he get his phone at?
He would have been the same going into secondary school.
Right.
Confirmation tends to be the sort of the...
They get a gift of a phone.
Yeah. The right, yeah.
Back to the book. People underestimate how difficult it is to write a book like this. Like the word count seems like, sure, I could do that.
It's funny. And I would have been the same when I started, because I would have written my first books, the Darkman books, were about 70,000 words.
Right.
And this is the shortest. And
how many words?
A couple of hundred words, maybe.
And
yet it takes, this is probably 2 years, more than 2 years of work. And you write, when you read those like the, we all know, or certainly anybody who kind of reads picture books knows that there's a real trick to a good one and the rhythm of it and the humour of it. And so you literally go syllable by syllable on it. And then, of course, the pictures have to go in. So it's a lot of back and forth with it. Yeah. But it's all worth it. And one of the things, especially with Ben's illustrations, is it sort of reminds you there's a lot of talk at the moment about AI and that being able to do all these jobs and our training the machines to take over the writers and the creatives, that that you can't, I still don't think there's anything that can replace that. When somebody puts the human aspect into it and the humour and don't be like that.
No, well,
I'm being
just
optimistic.
I'd love to be optimistic as well. But you have to remember that the AI is standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
And every, in a way, if, when you think about it, every children's book that was ever written and every illustration that's ever done,
I know,
for they can sort of scrape that off the internet in some way,
shape,
or form.
Well, they are.
And they are.
Yeah.
And then they can process all of that and give you something that you asked for.
Yeah, but I know I'm being naive about it, and you can come back to me, and we're at the beginning of a lot of this, but I still look at this and I look at the great children's books that are out there, the great writing that's out there, and I still feel that there's always that at the heart of it is the heart and the humanity. Mm. And I find it, as I said, I'm being naive now, but I don't know how that can't come through.
I just thought of it now. Here where the hope is, because we won't name any books, but among the very good books, of which yours is one, there are a lot of not so good books. And AI is scraping all those.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It brings down their average, if you know what I mean. So the very good books will still be produced by humans.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we can spot them, or we will be able to spot them for a long time. I mean, even at the moment, you look at an AI image and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel human.
So you don't feel threatened in any way, shape or form as a writer?
Well, of course, I feel threatened. But I feel threatened all the time. I mean, when you're writing and you're always sort of only as good as your last book, and you're always working on something new. So that always, I think anybody who's creating and anybody in the arts knows that there's always that.
We had Rosamond AI in earlier on, and she's a poet. Mm. And she wrote a poem which will feature as part of World Poetry Day on Inrod Éireann darts and stuff like that. And it's called The Laying Egg. Mm. And it's a reference to a thing her grandmother said, that when a farmer back in the day had a wife who worked, she was called The Laying Egg. And she was saying that her wife, Mila, allows her to write.
Yeah.
Is that the situation in your household?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first started writing Darkmouth, I was sort of sent off. I had 2 weeks holidays and I was sort of sent off to write in. I went to the National Library in Dublin and I was given that opportunity to write. And Maeve would have been pregnant with twins at this stage and we already had two other kids. So absolutely given that opportunity. And the funny thing about being in the National Library was you realised most of the people there weren't researching books, they were writing, coming up with their own projects. So there was a whole community of people within that kind of amazing space that were trying to do, trying to kind of break through that barrier and write something themselves. So absolutely. No, you need that time. And it's not easy. And I'm lucky I have a space in Ardgillan Castle, which is out in outside Skerries, between Skerries and Balbriggan, where I can go. I'm at the top of I have a room in the top of a tower there.
You do not?
I do. And I can write there and I'll be there tomorrow because of a bit of writing to
How
do.
How did you get that?
The Fingal County Council or Ardgillan have the spaces available for artists. So there's a whole artist community there, which is brilliant. So I'm sort of a writer there, but there's...
What's the view like?
It's amazing. And it looks, you'll appreciate it, because not just can you see out onto the sea, but you have the park run finish right underneath you, the hill that comes up. And the thing is, there's nothing below me, only historical documents. So I'm at the top of this tower and when I stick my head out the window, I'm like a really rubbish Rapunzel.
Yeah.
Like that. So it's fantastic. It's still nice. I'm not precious. I was writing on the train on the way in, but I'm not precious about the space, but when you have something like that, it's just brilliant.
So the current book took two years, The One and Only You. It's for 4 or 5 year olds, is it?
I think, certainly for that kind of picture book age, of that
age
where you're reading with your
kids. It's beautiful. The illustrations are beautiful.
They are. They really are.
And the message is beautiful, as I say.
That kind of spread where it takes over a couple of pages, it's just full of those. And it takes in family and the universe and aliens and dinosaurs and everything in between. So it's sort of epic, but personal at the same time. So
there's one core fact, but there are other facts around it.
There are. Do you want a good fact before we finish?
Go on.
If you stick your thumb up to the sky, and I get the kids to do this,
right,
there are 10 million galaxies behind it.
Your thumb?
Just your thumb.
I know. God, we're so small, tiny,
yes,
minuscule.
Yeah, but yet we're here and we can make the best of it.
10 million. Yeah, that's Tommy Bowen. Listen, before we let you go, what are you working on?
I'm kind of writing again for, I've got a couple of other picture books coming out in the next couple of years. And like I said, I'm doing one for 2027. So it takes quite a long time for them to do. And then I'm writing for older kids again. So I have a couple of things which haven't sort of...
Is it a new series? A new?
It all depends on how things go. So I'm working on a couple of things at the moment that sometimes happens in this job. You're doing things you can't
talk about.
But
Writing for older kids.
Yeah, and looking forward and actually really excited about and stuff that's a bit different to what I've done before.
Lovely to hear Shane on the radio. He's an inspiration for our students with dyslexia in Catherine Macaulay National School in Baker
Street. Brilliant. It's a brilliant school. Thanks.
Shane, great to see you. Congratulations with the book.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you very much. That's it from us. Cormac is on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.